Blog Talk Radio.
Let's go on to Well, here's one. Here's a bright idea. Let's expand Social Security. This is by Kenneth Connell. In a progressive leaders forum town hall meeting that will air Wednesday on Sirius XM 127, the Agenda radio show, Senator Tom Harkin joined Nancy Altman of Social Security Works, Edward Coyle of the Alliance for Retired Americans, and host Ari Robin Havit to discuss the future of Social Security, including Harkin's proposed legislation that would expand Social Security benefits. The Strengthening Social Security Act of 2013 would raise the monthly social benefit by about $65 and would measure inflation not with the chain CIP, a benefit cut, but using a more accurate measure of inflation for seniors, the CPI-E. I'm not sure what that is. The CPI-E would increase COLAs. The bill would also eliminate the Social Security tax cap so that the wealthiest people would pay the same rate the rest of us pay. Under this bill, Social Security would be able to pay out full benefits to the year 2048. Social Security should not be part of any deficit reduction debate, says Harkin. But Republicans are injecting Social Security into those debates because they want to cut the program, even though Social Security adds nothing to the deficit. Nothing contributes more to keeping the middle class out of poverty than Social Security, Harkin says. The real solution to strengthen Social Security funding for the long term is to make sure that the wealthy pay their fair share. The future projected Social Security shortfall is very manageable, Altman says, but an enormous amount of money is being spent in an effort to privatize the program so that Wall Street bankers can profit from seniors' retirement funds. In recent years, the importance of Social Security has become greater than ever. When Harkin first came to Congress in 1975, half of the American workers had pensions. Now that figure is closer to 20%. Harkin said 52% of people have less than $10,000 in savings. As reported last week, the United States faces a retirement security crisis. That's why he wants to increase the benefits that Social Security pays out each month. The AFL-CIO also supports expanding and improving Social Security benefits. Coyle says Alliance members are as angry as he's ever seen them. They recognize that no amount of cutting to Social Security will affect the deficit. Altman reminded everyone that Social Security is completely self-sufficient. It currently has $2.7 trillion surplus and is extremely cost-effective, with administration costs amounting to less than 1% of the program's budget. Panelists and audience members discuss ways in which Social Security has helped them personally. Coyle says his father passed away when he was 7 years old and his family waited for their Social Security check each week to survive. Audience member Diane Fleming says Social Security was vital to her family after her father passed away when she was 3. When Harkin's father became ill with the black lung and could no longer work in the mines, his family also needed the benefits. It was Social Security that kept our family together, Harkin says. Social Security is the country's largest children's program, Altman adds. It's meant to protect the whole family, she says. Panelists strongly opposed raising the retirement age and forcing people to work until they die. They also oppose dividing people by basing benefits or treatment on income or job type. We're all in this together, Harkin concludes. If you think Social Security benefits should be expanded and not cut, there's a petition that you can sign at strengthensocialsecurity.org. What do you have there, Leo?
Obama is Clint Eastwood stated this in September 7th, 2012, probably when he was doing that chair thing. But Obama is the greatest hoax ever perpetrated on the American people. Does any one of these coincidences, when taken singularly, appear to not mean much? But when taken as a whole, a computer would blow a main circuit if you asked it to calculate the odds there have occurred by chance alone. This is kind of interesting. It's a superimposed the big picture of most recent events, Fast and Furious, Benghazi, the IRS scandal, the NSA revelations, then pray for our country. Let's just see what this guy just sent this to me. The birtherreport.com. And it says, let's just read some of these indictments against Mr. Obama. This might be, it's only a minute and 50 seconds, but, you know, I don't know if anybody likes Mr. Obama. Me personally, I don't. I voted for the jerk, but boy, I'll tell you, I've never seen times like this before, and I've never seen it so bad, where so much of our Constitution has been shredded. It was terrible, terrible under George Bush, terrible, the worst. But this guy just perpetrated it under a liberal guise, you know. That's pretty sick.
He's a wolf in sheep's clothing,
yeah,
is what he is.
But this is important. This is something that, you know, came up recently, and I think I reported it as well, but it's about the birther issue again. But Sheriff Joe Arpaio and a bunch of investigators came up with unquestionable proof that Obama's birth certificate is fraud, is a complete and utter fraud. And he's been censored and everything else for this. But I think it's important that you take a chance to just hear this. It's a minute and 50 seconds. Actually, it's on YouTube as well. But Political Action, Article 2. R2SuperPAC.com.
I think that there's a real concern that Americans have, those who decide to study this whole election process, about transparency for Republican and Democratic candidates, and I think that that's legitimate. While I don't subscribe to the idea that the president was not born in the United States, I certainly can understand the concerns that Americans have for all of our elected officials or those who are ambitious to be such, that they reveal who they are. I think transparency is a legitimate request.
President Obama's birth certificate, as released by the White House in April of 2011 on the official White House website, as we suspect, it is a fraudulent document.
Every document surrounding this one individual is plagued with problems.
So we're talking about national security.
The media has demeaned this investigation at every turn.
And in all of my years of public life, I have never obstructed justice. And I think, too, that I can say that in my years of public life, that I welcome this kind of examination, because people have got to know whether or not their president's a crook.
The only people who don't want to disclose the truth are people with something to hide.
I think this situation is probably 10 times worse than Watergate.
But I'm not a crook. I'm not a crook.
Paid for by Article 2 Super PAC. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
I got to agree with that. I'm sorry. I just think the guy is interesting. Michelle Obama declares Barack Obama's home country is Kenya.
Oh, well, let's see
that's
what that
actually, says. Yeah. And Obama declares Kenya an American is me. She claims that Kenya is his home. Speaking in Western Kenya, Barack Obama said, "I'm so proud to come back home." August 26, 2006. U.S. Senator Barack Obama arrived in West Kenya on Saturday, August 26, to welcome thousands of cheering well-wishers there to greet and rising political star in American politics. Obama flew to Kisumu, shores of Lake Victoria, on the way to his Kenyan father's village for the highly anticipated climax of the two-week African tour. Yeah, we're in a second, folks. Just trying to get to it here. There we go. All right, this is Michelle Obama on stage saying that Barack's Kenya is Barack's home country.
Further reports.
Surrounding HIV testing, which is still plaguing so many of our communities, which you all know, a lot of that is due to homophobia. Barack has led by example. When we took our trip to Africa and visited his home country in Kenya, we took a public HIV test for the very point of showing folks in Kenya that there is nothing to be embarrassed about in getting tested. And we did it as a couple.
Obama, for it.
Maybe. You'd have to buy the book to see what's
no,
said
sometimes
in it.
They get an introduction, but I'm just trying to see which one it is, because they've got several of them. Well, it doesn't matter. Aside from the fact, just trying to see where he said it when he was at. It showed part of it, a picture of it, but it showed that he said, no boy, that the literary agent sent out a thing that said he was born in a, you know.
Can
there
you?
It is. Maybe this is a promise of power. It's a dollar on Amazon. It's an e-book. Let's see what it is. Promise of power. Oh, hardcover is a dollar. I got to get rid of those.
You can look inside.
Yeah. Let's see. Table of contents. Much of America is written in two books. America's Obama, an Obama friend once said, he hasn't left much for you to write, has he? Indeed, Obama's own personal story is exhaustive and well told. Okay. I maintain a balance along my literary edge and my personalism. That doesn't tell you anything.
Well, let's go back to the news, Leo.
That's why it's worth a book.
It takes time to search out.
Imagine a hardcover of this or a book. Yeah, it's amazing. But anyway, you go to Amazon and pick some of this crap up. So anyway, let's go to... we're looking at the literary thing, and it just says, Barack Obama, first African-American president of the Harvard Law Review, was born in Kenya, raised in Indonesia and Hawaii. Isn't that interesting? That's good. So, okay, spent enough time on that. But it's really, I think it's important that that people not forget that this guy, you know.
Is a fraud.
Is a fraud. You know, has been and will be. And he went under the name of Barry Satoru as well. Okay? And with a Social Security card from Connecticut. Yeah, back in the 70s. Or 80s.
It's just created, that's all.
Of course, my machine is canceled. Can we read something from there? Just my computer just froze.
Well, just recently, Massachusetts AFL-CIO applauds
Markey just won the
election of Ed Markey to the U.S. Senate.
Thing. Yeah, I was very, very pleased to see that.
Efforts of Massachusetts working people sent a real leader to the U.S. Senate. Ed Markey will be a strong and capable partner for Elizabeth Warren in the fight to restore a fair economy and a strong middle class. Markey's experience in Congress and his deep commitment to improving the lives of Massachusetts men and women will help both Democrats and Republicans tackle the most pressing issues facing the Senate today, from job creation and tax fairness to immigration reform. We are proud to call Ed Markey our new senator. That's from Massachusetts. So that was good. He'll be voting along the lines that I think are important, which is a good thing.
Yeah. No, I think Massachusetts really has got a hell of a good team there.
And let's
Much better in Connecticut. We have Murphy and Blumenthal.
Workers in Bangladesh need a 1-2 punch. After the catastrophic Rana Plaza garment factory building collapse that resulted in over 1,000 people dead and over 1,000 injured Bangladeshi workers, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, chaired by Senator Robert Menendez from New Jersey, held a hearing to investigate labor issues in Bangladesh. I testified for the AFL-CIO at that hearing. This is by Celeste Drake. I tried to get across two main points that prove the government of Bangladesh has been too neglectful for too long, shirking its duty to protect the very workers who are the backbone of the Bangladeshi economy and who make it grow. First, given the 6-year review of Bangladesh's inadequate labor practices and the GOP's failure to comply with the legal requirements to stay in the generalized system of preferences program. And that is a unilateral tariff benefits program that the U.S. grants to Bangladesh and other developing countries. The U.S. government must now act to withdraw, suspend, or limit Bangladesh's benefits. Second, because the GOP cannot solve the massive labor abuses in its country without the cooperation of important economic players, the U.S. brands who source in Bangladesh and make multi-million dollar profits off Bangladeshi workers who are paid rock-bottom wages to work in death traps must join the binding accord on fires and building safety in Bangladesh. And so far, only a few American-based brands, including Sean John, PHV, and Abercrombie & Fitch, have joined. Other large American brands, including Walmart, Target, Gap, and JCPenney, have refused to sign. Some of these American brands are pursuing an alternative agenda, an agenda that, if based on existing corporate social responsibility, simply won't work. Many of Bangladesh's 4 million garment workers, the vast majority of them young women, risk their lives every day working in thousands of unregulated, poorly constructed factories. Their contribution to Bangladesh's $19 billion garment industry has been rewarded with abysmally low wages, denial of rights, and unacceptable workplace conditions. As I told the committee, given that about 60% of Bangladesh's factories are at risk of collapse and that two of the four worst factory disasters in history of the garment industry happened in Bangladesh in the last 7 months, it's time for those profiting most from the system to help reform it. But without laws securing those rights and a credible threat of sanctions to deter violations, some employers will continue to cut corners, which is why the GOP must take meaningful, concrete, measurable steps to ensure its workers can exercise their internationally recognized labor rights, including the rights to the freedom of association, collective bargaining, and acceptable conditions of work. As I told the committee, the time for granting the benefits of the doubt is past. Workers have paid for U.S. patients with their lives. Menendez agreed that protecting labor rights for workers is imperative. He remarked, "No one will want to wear a piece of clothing made in Bangladesh if it's on the blood of workers," while urging the administration to do more than saber-rattling with respect to workers' rights in Bangladesh.
Yes.
So, what do you have over there?
Well, I got something really sad. Adolf Hitler said, "The best way to take control over a people and control them utterly is to take a little of their freedom at a time to erode rights by 1,000 tiny and almost imperceptible reductions. In this way, the people will not see those rights and freedoms being removed until past the point at which these changes cannot be reversed." That was Adolf Hitler's method of taking
gradualism.
Over the world. Yeah. And that's exactly where we're at today, folks. That's where we're here in this country. And boy, we are at the point of no return. In fact, let me do, I don't know if I can play this, I don't care. It's a YouTube video, so might as well do it. It's for everybody to hear. And the Traveling Wilburys, End of the Line. So it's time for a break.
Okay.
If I can get it. Let's see if it plays. This is from Roy Orbison. Sends this over. Well, he's dead, but I mean his page, which I'm a friend of. Whatever you want. want something really good to, you know. Oh, here we go. Let's see if this works.
Okay.
sometimes people send me this stuff that, fast. Every time the show, it seems that
people send good stuff.
That's yeah.
Really good
yeah.
of them.
This is really another, this is a fascinating thing. Another guy sent me a, it was a, I'm trying to think of it was Ralph Watson, Ralph, they have it on here. It's a Conspiracy Watch photo, and it says, Plan of Action for U.S. It's a cartoon, and you got Trotsky writing this out, okay, and then this was a cartoon from 1934, right?
Uh-huh.
It says, Plan of Action for the U.S., spend, 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 under the guise of recovery. Bust the government, blame the capitalists for the failure, junk the Constitution, and declare a dictatorship. That's pretty freaky, huh?
Yeah.
That's pretty freaky. Yeah. Anyway. This was pretty cool. Tons of GMO sugar beets were set ablaze in Oregon. Yeah,
how about that?
People set it for the entire crop. Not one media outlet outside the local circles has dared to mention it, perhaps because government fears that if the public learns that other people are getting fighting mad, literally, they might join in and become an actual revolution. 40 tons of GMO sugar beets were set ablaze in eastern Oregon yesterday. 40 tons. The entire acreage of two full fields of crops in the ground were set ablaze over a three-night period of time. The lawmakers and corporations refused to honor the Constitution and instead engaged in legalized criminal acts such as enabled by the Monsanto Protection Act. People get mad.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I think
good
that,
for them.
Yeah, I was like amazed when I saw that. Now this is another thing that's really, really fascinating. And Ralph Watson, who sends me a lot of stuff on my Facebook page, is a friend. Yeah, this one says an article that says
why the banking elite want riots in America.
Yeah,
that's an interesting. I wouldn't think they would.
No, it's an interesting article.
This is from Top Information Post, digital news aggregation.
Hang on one second.
There they are. All the charming.
The banking elite want riots in America. And it says, every indication clearly suggests that authorities in the United States are preparing for widespread civil unrest. This trend has not emerged by accident. It is part of a tried and tested method used by the banking elite to seize control of nations, strip them of their assets, and absorb them into the New World Order. There is a crucial economic imperative as to why the elite is seeking to engineer and exploit social unrest. As respected investigator reporter Greg Pulaski exposed in 2001, the global banking elite, named the World Bank and the IMF, have honed a technique that has allowed them to asset strip numerous other countries in the past, a technique that has come to be known as the IMF riot.
In April 2001, Palast obtained leaked World Bank documents that outlined a four-step process on how to loot nations of their wealth and infrastructure, placing control of resources into the hands of the banking elite. One of the final steps of the process, the IMF riot, detailed how the elite would plan for mass civil unrest ahead of the time that would have the effect of scaring off investors and causing government bankruptcies. That happened in Greece. This economic arson has its price side for foreigners who can then pick off remaining assets at fire sale prices, writes Palast, adding, a pattern emerges. There are lots of losers, but the clear winners seem to be the Western banks and the U.S. Treasury. In other words, the banking elites create the very economic environment, soaring interest rates, spiraling food prices, poverty, lower standards of living, that precipitate civil unrest, and then like a vulture swoops down to devour what remains of the country's assets on the cheap. We have already seen the process unfold in places like Bolivia, Ecuador, Indonesia, Greece, and Argentina. Next on the chopping block are Spain, Italy, Britain, and France, all of which have seen widespread riots over the last 2 years. As Ha-Joon Chang explains in The Guardian, the roots of Europe's riots were sparked by governments inflicting an old IMF-style program on their own populations. namely the same programs of austerity, privatization, and deregulation that caused the riots of the 80s and 90s in poorer countries.
Although, like the IMF and the World Bank have pillaged half of the globe with their economic terrorism, America remains the ultimate prize. The first step of the four-step process of bankster seizure of a country, privatization of what state-owned assets, is already well underway in America, with infrastructure being sold off to foreign corporations with the aid of Goldman Sachs at a frightening pace. A key component of the banking elite insidious agenda to bring about an economic collapse in America by design also centers around the process of deindustrializing the country, eviscerating the nation's platform for self-sufficiency, and replacing it with dependence on banker bailouts. This has already been largely achieved in Europe, and just about every major economy on the continent run by Goldman Sachs-affiliated technocrats.
In the United States, 32% of manufacturing jobs have been lost since 2000, while 56,000 manufacturing facilities have been mothballed since 2001. The Obama administration has also declared war on the coal industry, with Obama himself promising to bankrupt anyone who tries to build a new coal plant. Meanwhile, Obama builds a new coal plant every 2 weeks.
No, China.
Oh, excuse me. Did I say Obama?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, China builds a new coal plant every 2 weeks. Given the clear economic motive for stirring unrest in the United States, we'd expect to see preparations for domestic disorder in numerous different guises. And indeed, the signs are everywhere. The National Defense Authorization Act.
The Obama administration passage of the NDAA legislation authorizes kidnapping and indefinite detention without trials of American citizens on U.S. soil, serves to create the framework for mass arrests of protesters and journalists in a time of declared national emergency.
Obama's war on whistleblowers. The Obama administration's brazen an aggressive prosecution of whistleblowers for divulging government corruption in the public interest is clearly a device designed to intimidate whistleblowers from speaking out when the proverbial hits the fan. That's like what's happening with Snowden.
Spying on social media for signs of unrest. The Department of Homeland Security and other federal agencies are actively engaged in spying on social media as well as news websites to look for reports or comments that reflect adversely on the U.S. government and the DHS. The government is on the lookout for the tipping point when heated online rhetoric spills into the streets in the form of unrest.
Building huge spy centers to track unrest. The NSA is building the country's biggest spy center in the middle of the Utah desert. The purpose of this data facility is to intercept all forms of communication, including the complete contents of private emails, cell phone calls, and Google searches, as well as all sorts of personal data trails, parking receipts, travel itineraries, bookstore purchases, and other digital pocket litter. By creating a gigantic database of every communication imaginable, the NSA hopes to monitor and preempt the spread of mass civil unrest in America.
Preparing drones for domestic oppression. Last week, the Justice Department reaffirmed its position that the Obama administration can use armed drones to assassinate Americans under the NDAA. The whole of the United States has been declared a battlefield, meaning the drones may soon be used to execute American citizens on U.S. soil. The government that resorts to killing its own citizens without any legal process whatsoever is clearly a dictatorship engaged in domestic oppression. The only imaginable scenario under which this program would be justifiable was if the U.S. had under a state of martial law and the government was on the verge of collapse.
Preparing for martial law. The Department of Homeland Security has purchased over 1.6 billion rounds of ammunition in the last 10 months alone. At the height of combat operations in Iraq, the U.S. Army only used 5.5 million bullets a month. Why has the DHS, that's the Department of Homeland Security, stockpiled enough bullets for a 30-year war if it is not preparing for some form of domestic disorder? Preparation for martial law can be seen in numerous guises, but perhaps the most chilling is a nationwide FEMA program which is training pastors and other religious representatives to become secret police enforcers who teach their congregations to obey the government in preparation for the implementation of martial law, property and firearm seizures, mass vaccination programs, and forced relocation.
Characterizing the American people as the new target on the war on terror, the U.S. Army's operating concept of 2016 to 2028 dictates that the military full-spectrum operations will include operations with American borders, scenarios where Americans form into militia groups and become insurrectionists as a result of an economic collapse and have to be eliminated by the U.S. Army have already been mapped out by military planners. The leaked U.S. Army manual also reveals plans for the military to carry out civil disturbance operations during which troops will be used domestically to quell riots, confiscate firearms, and even kill Americans on U.S. soil during mass civil unrest. The Department of Homeland Security Seize Something, Say Something program habitually portrays middle-class Americans as terrorists.
Yes.
In addition, numerous DHS-funded reports have characterized liberty lovers and other constitutionalists as domestic terrorists.
Every indication presents us with an inescapable reality that the U.S. government is preparing for mass civil unrest at some point over the next 5 to 10 years. When we look at the recent history of nations that have suffered financial collapse, domestic disorder is clearly a key component of a deliberate agenda on behalf of the banking elite to undermine and loot economies, confiscating national sovereignty in the process.
Now, I'll tell you something right now,
folks.
Yeah, I'll tell you right now, it's happening. And the saddest part
bit
about
by
all
bit.
This is we're letting it happen. You know, we're letting it happen. You know, now you can check this top information post, Digital News Aggression.
Aggregation.
Topinfopost.com. That's the name of the blog or the site. So, I mean, it's pretty scary. It's really scary, you know. So, anyway, here's another big one that bothered me. It's 11 food ingredients banned outside the U.S. that we eat. Yeah. Pretty sick. Local health sustainability. 11 food ingredients banned outside the U.S. that we eat. They got a big picture of Nutri-Grain cereal bar or something.
Yeah.
Whole grains.
A recently published list of foods banned in countries outside the U.S. has riled the plates of many in the food industry. Last week, BuzzFeed published a list of 8 ingredients banned outside the U.S. that are found in foods in America. This list was derived from the book Rich Food, Poor Food, The Ultimate Grocery Purchasing System, written by a husband and wife team, Jason Calton, who has a PhD in nutrition, and Mira Calton, a licensed certified nutritionist. Said Mira Calton, "We call it our GPS of grocery purchasing system, how to identify dangerous ingredients so people can shop safe and smart in the grocery store." The book includes a list of banned foods and dangerous foods, which they call poor food. Calton said manufacturers are not putting these ingredients in their food to be bad people. It might have been part of their original formula, and sometimes they don't know, Calton said. The Food and Drug Administration assures the public that despite the frenzy over the list of ingredients banned in some countries outside the U.S., it is doing its job of monitoring food safety.
Yeah, they're so full of crap. It's unbelievable. They allow Monsanto. I mean, they're Monsanto. The FDA director is a Monsanto lawyer and vice president. As part of FDA's overall commitment to ensure the safety of the food supply, the agency uses an extensive science-based process to evaluate the safety of food additives, the agency said in a statement to ABC News. The law requires that FDA determines there is reasonable certainty that an additive does not cause harm when it is used as intended. The agency continues to monitor the science on food additives and is prepared take appropriate action if there are safety concerns. When determining that a food or ingredient is generally recognized as safe, or GRAS, for its intended use in food, the same safe quantity quality of evidence is required as needed to approve a food additive. Yeah, what a crock of crap. Derek Lowe, a chemist who is a PhD from Duke University, said the list is an example of chemophobia, he told ABC News, and his reaction to the viral online list was incredulity and revulsion.
Incredulity.
Yeah. So this
Let's see what the list is.
Yeah, I'm trying to find it because...
Oh, number one, here it is.
Yeah.
Number one is...
So this has all been poo-pooed by the mainstream media, remember, folks.
Number one is blue food coloring, banned in Norway, Finland, France. Blue number one and blue number two can be found in candy, cereal, drinks, and pet food in the U.S., Carlton says. Kellogg's did not reply to the multiple requests for comments about its use of blue number one, listed as an ingredient in some Nutri-Gain bars. Huh.
And, anything that's probably blueberry, all right, it's got the blue color.
Let's see what else.
All right. Because
we only have a few minutes.
Yeah.
I want to make sure we get them all.
Blue number one was at one point banned in several other European countries. The EUA later certified it as safe.
Excuse me.
Blue number two food coloring.
Until the 20th century, food coloring was obtained from natural sources. Jason and Mira Kalfin write, in rich food, poor food. People gathered spices like saffron and turmeric to add rich hues to their otherwise bland colored food. While this method may have been somewhat limiting in shades, at least it was safe. Today, most artificial colors are made from coal tar.
Oh, my God.
Blue number two, listed as an ingredient in Mars M&M's. In a statement for Mars, the company said around the globe there can be slightly different formulation and products available based on both local requirements and consumer preferences. All the colors we used in our product, no matter where they are sold, comply with blah, blah, blah.
Coal tar.
That's disgusting.
Yellow number five and yellow number six, food coloring, is banned in Norway and Austria due to compounds benzidine and...
amino bisphenol.
They call them safe. Six of the 11 studies on yellow number five show that it caused genotoxicity, a deterioration of the cell's genetic material with potential to mutilate healthy DNA. God, this is yellow number five, so if you see this on your and yellow number six in your foods, avoid that. Let's see, red number 40. Red number 40 is a food additive. May cause the carcinogenic contaminant P. cresidin, and it is thought to cause tumors of the immune system. According to Rich Food, Poor Food, in UK, it is not recommended for children. The Carlton's right, but it is approved for use in the EU. The ingredient can be found in fruit cocktail, maraschino cherries, grenadine, cherry pie mix, ice cream, candy, and other products, the Carlton say.
Mm-hmm.
So that's red dye number 40.
40. Huh?
Okay. The possibility of cresidinyl sulfuric acid to be produced as a metabolite, and this goes on. But brominated vegetable oil.
Brominated vegetable oil, or BVO, acts as emulsifier in soda and sports drinks, preventing the flavoring from separating and floating to the surface. The ingredient is banned in more than 100 countries because it contains bromine, a chemical whose vapors can be corrosive or toxic.
Wow.
Aurora Gonzalez, a spokesman for Pepsi Company, which owns Mountain Dew, said, "We take consumer safety and product integrity seriously, and we can assure you that Mountain Dew is safe. As standard practice, we constantly evaluate our formulas and ingredients to be sure they comply with all regulations."
Yeah, and you know what? Pepsi is known, you can look this up on Google or anywhere, and Pepsi is known for using human embryos for flavoring.
Lowe said the same chemical dangers of consuming bromine directly can be said of chlorine. Bromine-containing compounds can indeed cause bad reactions to people, but not because bromine is a corrosive gas, he says. When a bromine atom is bonded to a carbon, as it is in BVO, it is no longer bromine's pure element.
Any more than the chlorine and salt in the table salt is the World War I poison gas, or the phosphorus in your DNA is the burning white phosphorus found in military jerseys. Okay.
Oh, boy. Azodicarbonide, the ingredient.
That's why it's depressed on what you get 100 of them.
Oh, boy. Well, azodicarbonide is found in, let's go back up to that just so we can tell people. We just have a few minutes. Ingredient which can bleach flour is being in Australia, the UK, and many European countries. It's an asthma-causing allergen. Okay, so you want to avoid that.
Yeah,
potassium bromate.
Bromated flour.
Strengthens dough, contains bromine, is also brominated vegetable oil.
Olestra fat substitute is banned in the UK. And they came out with that as a fat soluble back at low fat potato chips and stuff.
Uh-huh. People got sick.
Yeah, it causes diarrhea. And people got extremely sick on it. Food should be delivering, robbing us of vital nutrients. That's food should really be.
It is found in Ruffles Light and Lay's Wild Chips.
Right.
Frito-Lay did not return a request for comment.
Lower is a non-caloric fat substitute that interferes with the absorption of fat-soluble vitamins, but potato chips are not a very good source of vitamins to start with, you guys. It's a terrible thing. I highly avoid it.
Butylated, here's one. Butylated, go back up. Butylated hydroxynol and butylated hydroxytoline.
Yeah, forget about it. Okay, you can't even read this stuff on your stuff.
All kinds of things. Well, nonetheless,
there's only one thing more I wanted to show before we go on.
Well, let's let people know where they can go to read this article.
Yeah, Local Healthy Sustainable. It's called
Shared by Support Farmers Markets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's streamshare.com. Okay, localsustainability.streamshare.com, and I subscribe to that Local Farmers Markets. I said that. I just want to read this. The worst toilet paper, the best and worst toilet paper, before we go. Okay? I think everybody should know what the best and worst toilet paper is. See?
I don't know.
You don't think so? It's coming up, folks. Now you know. A Consumer Report. The best toilet paper wipeout top brand. White Cloud.
Okay. I think I'll pass on this.
Consumer Reports revisited its toilet paper rating after testing more than 24 products, naming the worst and best brands. 3 Walmart products were named in the top 5 winner circle. White Cloud, which is sold only in its stores, first place, let's see, Quilted Northern. All 3 toilet papers rated highly in softness, though top rated White Cloud, 3-Ply Ultra, and combined softness and superior strength. So there you go, folks. Those are the top 3 toilet papers, all sold in Walmart.
Well, here's an article that really bothered me. National Police Unit monitors 9,000 domestic extremists. The National Police Unit that uses undercover offices to spy on political groups is currently monitoring 9,000 people with disease. Deemed domestic extremists. The National Domestic Extremist Unit is using surveillance techniques to monitor campaigners who are listed on a secret database, details of which have been disclosed to The Guardian after a Freedom of Information request. A total of 8,931 individuals have their own record on a database kept by the unit for which the Metropolitan Police is the lead force.
I wanted to mention 2 articles, please, that you can go to. Supreme Court bombshell said that the Supreme Court just stated they have no right to remain silent. All right. Of course, you haven't heard this in the mainstream media.
No.
Okay. In a 5-4 decision, the Supreme Court held that the suspect's silence can be used to infer guilt. Imagine that. All right. Now, the other thing is,
so you have an advantage if you like the elite in a pathological liar.
Yeah, you got, you know, they don't lie. Just you know, all you got to do is lie. Don't stay silent. And the next thing I wanted to mention is you can go to get this one in naturalnews.com. Extremely important article. As it is predicted, NSA has been blackmailing Supreme Court judges and members of Congress, and they have evidence to prove to show that. All right? So please go to that. Oh, an extensive list of, oh man, I wish we had an hour on this. Extensive list of politicians paid off by Monsanto. Check this out. Nationofchange.org. All right? You'll be amazed at the people that Monsanto paid off. Okay? And I'm just going to, with five more, we're over time now, but I think I should go just mention some of these horrible people, okay, that have been paid off by Monsanto. People you might know that have donated to all of this money to their campaigns. Eric Cantor got $10,000 recently.
William Clay, Democrat, Missouri, yeah. $10,000.
Emmanuel Cleaver, Missouri. Mike Conaway, Texas.
Joe Courtney, Connecticut, got $4,500.
Monsanto. I'll bet you Delora is in there because her husband's a lobbyist for Monsanto. Rick Crawford, Steve, let's see, Cord Gardner, Colorado. Where's the, let's see. Holden, Tim Holden, Randy Hutland. Nope, just a couple. let's see. This goes on and on and on. Stephen King from Idaho or Iowa. The list is, you gotta go to this list. I don't recognize a lot of his names, but they're all congressmen now.
Bill Owens, New York.
Yeah. Senate.
Total paid by Monsanto to Democrats, $37,500. Total paid by Monsanto to Republicans, $85,000. Boy, they're all
bought
cheap.
They're cheap, really cheap. It's unbelievable cheap there. You got almost every senator here paid off, and half the congressman. So, you know, go to that site, check it out. Not nationofchange.org. Check out.
And considering the profits of that company, boy, they bought them cheap.
Yeah, but they paid off somebody. They paid off Obama. Yeah. And you know, this,
and threw the peanuts to the Congress.
Yeah. Let me just end with what Ron Paul said about Snowden. And hang on 1 second here. We're going to go to it. I just want to read it. My understanding, Ron Paul said this recently. My understanding is that espionage means giving secret or classified information to the enemy. Since Snowden shared information with the American people, his indictment for espionage could reveal or confirm that the U.S. government views you and me as the enemy.
Uh-huh.
By Ron Paul.
And I think he might be right.
I think he is right.
But thank you for being with us tonight. Okay. And I'm sorry the news wasn't more cheerful.
Oh, one more thing. Moody's downgraded Hong Kong over Snowden's over Snowden, its rating agency, as a political arm of the U.S.
I'm sure they care, right?
But they downgraded Hong Kong right after Snowden, took the
arm right
there.
Like they care.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Moody's. Oh, this one here, too. This was the one that I believe, and I think we can end with this. This guy, Krauthammer, on Fox News. And I've never been a Fox News guy, but man, this guy said it right on the money when he talked about Obama. Nobody cares about what Obama says, he says.
The fact that people don't like the United States is not new. What's new is that these non-likers have no respect for the United States. As Jason indicates, nobody worries or cares about what Obama says because it carries no weight. We heard Jay Carney say, what did he say? This would unquestionably have a negative impact on U.S.-Chinese relations. Do you think anybody in Beijing cares about that or believes that? Is there any evidence? Remember how the president said, we're going to hold accountable those who killed our ambassador in Libya. We're going to hold accountable the authorities in Syria who have killed so many of their own people. He's talked 100 times about holding X or Y or Z accountable. Nobody's held accountable, and everyone knows that. The Washington Post, in their news story today, spoke about Snowden eluding the grasp of the normally long arm of U.S. justice. If there's no element of respect or fear And you saw it in the summit with the head of the United States and head of Russia and China within the last 2 weeks. They care nothing for what Obama says, and they know that when he makes a threat, it carries no weight behind it. Just where does this...
So, there you go, folks.
Huh.
So much we are... I agree with him on that, because you see it. Nobody gives a crap about what Obama says.
I think that's true, but on that note...
By the way, one more thing. Shame on the 28 Democratic senators who voted to cut food stamps. And it says... Let's see if they gave the names here. Democratic Senator Baucus, Bennett, Cardin, Carper, Coons, Donnelly, Durbin, Feinstein, Franken, Hagan, Harkin, Heinrich, Heitkamp, Johnson, Kane, Klobuchar, Landrieu, Mankin, McCaskill, McCluskey, Nelson, Pryor, Rockefeller, Shaheen, Stabenow, Tester, Mark Udall, and Warner. Those are the 28 Senate Democrats who voted against food stamp bill. As I said last week, the U.S. Senate voted down an amendment by Kristen Gillibrand to restore $4.1 billion in food stamp cuts. By reducing corporate welfare to a handful of crop insurance companies, most based overseas. Only 26 senators voted yes. Right? But we can't explain obstructionist Republicans. 28 Senate Democrats joined with all voting Republicans to defeat the crucial bill. If these cuts are allowed, around 500,000 low-income households will lose an average of $90 in monthly benefits. Food stamps are already being cut, all right, and these proposed new cuts from both parties will only make it worse. Given that so many people are working for fewer hours or lower wages, now is not the time to cut such essential benefits. And as a response, but the amazing thing is that, you know, the thing was to cut overseas food crop farm subsidies for overseas.
Uh-huh.
What the hell is that?
I don't know.
And to give the money into the food stamp program. So, hey, what can I tell you guys? It's all sick. 666666. That was from Daily Cause. So, I want to thank everybody who joined us. We ran over a little overtime here, but I want to still appreciate you listening, you know, to the archives, because I got off about 15 minutes ago.
Yeah. Well, good night,
anyway,
folks.
Thank you very much. And
Leo, we'll talk to you tomorrow.